You're listening to the Pops on Hops podcast, where we listen to some pops, drink a little hops, and I get to hang out with my pop. I'm Abigail Hummel.
And I'm Barry Hummel, and we want to welcome you to episode 49, where Abigail got to choose the album and I got to pick the brewery. Abigail, what will we be listening to today?
Today, we will be reviewing the album Sounds Like This by Eric Hutchinson. And as I mentioned when I assigned you this album, this was an album that I got really into my freshman year of college, so 2012, 2013. But the album is from several years before that. It was originally released in 2007, and then it was re-released under a label in 2008. We'll get into a little bit of that story. But in the meantime, why don't you tell us where we're drinking today?
Well, we're drinking at a place today that's a little more of a personal place than tied to the album name or title. And this is Glasstown Brewing. This is the closest brewery to the town I grew up in Bristol, New Jersey. The brewery itself is in Millville, New Jersey, down by the Millville Airport. They'll be celebrating their 10th anniversary next year. They were opened in 2013, and the first time I came here was with my brother back in 2015. And virtually every time I get to town, I get to come out to this brewery, and it has grown over the years from their original warehouse that we're sitting in today. They've opened an enormous warehouse next door to store barrels for aging and have a bigger production facility over there. So they've really grown over the almost decade that they've been here. And so we're here visiting, and so why not drag everybody from the family? They've been kind enough to open the place early for us.
And we have a little bit of an entourage.
We have an entourage. We actually have people with us today, and we brought in food, and everybody in the brewery right now is here because of us, except the bartender.
Well, I guess technically,
he's here because of us. And so we're very excited to be here today and be able to share this little place that is really a nice personal success story for me and for Derek, because we've been coming here since the very beginning.
They have some really tasty looking stuff on the menu, some of which it sounds like you've already had before, so we won't be reviewing it on the podcast, but maybe during cleanup we'll have a few bonus beers.
Well, most of the core beers I've had, so it's hard for you to pick some of the basics off that board, which are all very good and have been done for a very long time. But I would say they've expanded their repertoire over time, right? So when they first were here, it was the core beers and they were doing them very well, and it was a very cool local hangout. There's a ton of work traffic comes through. Like your Uncle Derek discovered it because he works in Millville, but he lives in Bristol, and this is on the way home. So they would come over after work, and they would do an employee hangout every once in a while. They had a special night. I forget what night of the week it was where they just sort of all stopped in here after work.
That's fun.
So it's a very cool local hangout.
Yeah.
More so than even a brewery. It just became a very cool place to hang out. Again, the first time I came here, the room we're sitting in was it. And as we walked up today, not that we could sit outside, there's huge places to sit outside now. And
yeah, why won't we be sitting outside, Dad?
Because it's very cold.
It's 20 degrees here in Millville. Actually, I think it's 28, but the feels like it's 20.
Yeah,
so we will not be braving that.
Barely got the gear in from the parking lot. But
so tell me, do you know where Glasstown came from, the name?
Well, it's because this was Millville, and the whole area, but Millville in particular, had a number of glass factories historically. They're a big glass production town.
Interesting.
And in fact, your Uncle Derek is a manager of Duran Glass, which is here in Millville. It's one of the last few that are left.
Oh,
they
wow.
really don't have the kind of glass production in the area that they used to have. Part is because one of the reasons there was so much glass made in this area was because there was access to sand.
Huh.
Because it's near
it's
the Jersey
river.
Shore, and it's in the wetlands. So there's a lot of sand. There were actually sand excavation plants and things like that in the area.
How interesting.
But the sand that can be used for glass has kind of been tapped out for the most part. That was part of the issue. And then plastic took over a lot of the things, especially for, say, sodas and other products ended up in plastic as opposed to glass. And so there was less of a need for glass products. And then some of the factories consolidated or moved the jobs to other places. And so that combination of things has really downsized the number of glass production facilities in South Jersey. So that's why it's Glasstown.
Well, I'm thirsty, Dad. So why don't we start?
All right.
These beers are staring me in the eye.
Well, I picked four off the menu that I've not had. They kind of run the gamut. I did try to err on the side of things I thought you would like.
How kind of you.
There's really only one IPA on the board, but other than that, they're pretty wide variety of things. So we're going to start off with a golden ale. This is called Fortescue Fisherman's Ale. It's a golden ale of 4.8% ABV. It's described as malty and biscuity. It's designed with a moderate alcohol content for those long days on the water. Now, why would they say that? Because Fortescue is a fishing community along the Delaware Bay that you got to drive outside Millville. It's probably half an hour from here. It's where I used to go fishing with my grandfather all those years ago, where, you know, he had kept his boat at home, and we would go down and he would drop the boat in Fortescue and we'd go out and fish all day on a Delaware Bay. So Fortescue has a lot of meaning to me
well.
And that's where that name comes from.
All right. So we're expecting what? Biscuity?
Biscuity and probably malty, I would say. It's a golden ale.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh.
So that's a very clean tasting.
Very clean.
Again, golden ales. Not my preferred category, but that's a good golden ale.
It's really good. The malt is subtle, but it has, I want to say almost no identifiable fruit flavors, but it has almost a fruity sweetness more than a malty sweetness, I would say.
It's definitely not sweet from the malt. The maltiness is more bready than sweet.
I get almost apple from that.
Oh, I'm not picking up too much of that, but
it's
very
tasty. It leaves the palate quickly, and that's a really good beer.
And at 4.8%, you could certainly leave for a fishing trip out of the Fortescue area of to the Delaware Bay and enjoy your day out
Indeed.
There with that one. So tell me about this young man, Eric Hutchinson.
I would love to. So Eric Hutchinson is a singer-songwriter, grew up in sort of a suburb of Washington, D.C., went to college in Boston, so he's sort of claimed by both metropolitan areas. He had a couple of EPs before this album that we're going to be reviewing today, Sounds Like This, which was his first full-length album, including one in 2006 called Before I Sold Out, which is very interesting to me because he was not at that time, I don't think, signed to a label. He signed to a label in 2005, and then it went under. So he had to release this album, Sounds Like This, independently.
Oh, wow.
At first. So he recorded it and released it independently, and it made waves. It was plugged by Perez Hilton, the gossip blogger.
Oh, wow.
And as a result, it went to number 5 on the iTunes store in September 2007.
Oh, get out of here.
And it debuted at number 1 on the Billboard Heat Seekers chart, which is for new but promising up-and-coming albums. And it became the highest charting album by an unsigned artist in iTunes history.
How about that?
So in 2008, he then signed with Warner Brothers Records, who re-released the album, and it then was eligible for all the normal charts that we hear about. It didn't really peak too highly on any of the charts. It was 134 on the Billboard 200. So it made the Billboard 200, but on the Billboard Independent Albums chart, it was number 17. It is right in my wheelhouse of kind of singer-songwriter, upbeat, pop, rock. And Eric Hutchinson himself plays a ton of instruments on this album. So he does the vocals, obviously. He was the songwriter of all the songs, but he also plays piano, acoustic guitar, keyboards, Moog bass, and percussion. And then he has this incredible, I mean, you can see I'm showing the Wikipedia list of all the other personnel that were on this album, and an incredible variety of instruments, including saxophone, which is very prominent in one of the songs, synths, congas, electric sitar, clavinet, which is an instrument I've not even heard of. So the personnel and instrumentation on this album is just outrageous. And that, I assume that must have all been after he was signed to the label. I don't know if he had access to all those personnel when he recorded it independently.
Well, there's a good question. Did he re-record the album when he signed to the label, or did they just basically re-release what he produced independently?
Let's see. I don't have any info on that.
I would have to believe that if it got plugged as widely as it was by, say, Perez Hilton and got the kind of notoriety that it did, that it sounded this good out of the box, I don't think they would have gone back and re-recorded it.
Yeah,
I didn't see a ton of information about the guy, period. When I went to try to look some stuff up, I had some limited notes because there's not a ton of information about the guy. Now, in the aftermath of this album, has he continued to...
Yep. He's had other albums, 2012, 2014, 2015, 2018, 2019, and 2020.
So he's pretty active still.
Yeah, pretty active. The 2021, it originally had a release date that was pushed back due to COVID, and then it had a second release date that was pushed back due to the George Floyd protests and sort of the national climate surrounding that. So it eventually was released in September of 2020 after 2 delays. I have not listened to any albums after this one. There are singles from his second album that I like. There may be some from his third album, but I've not listened to another full album since this one. I came to this album, I think, from my freshman year roommate in college, Aaron, who I was friends with in high school as well. The first song I ever heard on the album was Okay, It's All Right With Me. And that song was enough to make me seek out the rest of the album. I have loved this album from the jump, and putting it back in to listen to when I assigned it to you, I still know every word on the album. It just came right back to me. It is a joyful album. It makes me feel happy to listen to it. The majority of the songs are very upbeat and happy sounding. And I think his vocal style is very interesting. He has some unique phraseology.
He does.
Similar to what we've talked about. He makes words into multiple syllables, which is something you're not a fan of, but I think he makes it sound darn good.
And he does it. He'll go 2-3 syllables in a word. Like, I know what you're saying. He does a little of that, but I don't find that to be an extreme thing that he's doing. But yes, we've had that conversation about certain artists,
yeah,
the Mariah Careys of the world, yeah, that I don't appreciate because it doesn't read genuine to me. That's performative and not emotionally genuine. And the way he sings, I would say, is emotionally genuine. I don't find it to be performative for the sake of performing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't bother me in his performance. So first of all, my reaction to it, I put it in, loved it from the opening notes. This is an incredibly fun album. It's primarily instrumentation that I like. I notice on his cover, which is kind of arts and crafts, that the two instruments he focused on were the guitar and the piano.
Yeah,
so I kind of,
yeah,
knew going in it was going to be things that I liked, because I really like a lot of keyboards in music. I'm with you. I found most of the songs to be joyful and happy. Maybe not what they're about necessarily when you read some,
sure,
of the lyrics, but they're not dark sounding.
Right, right.
Until about track, I want to say, of the,
I think it's,
of the,
nine.
It's eight.
Is it?
Track eight is the one that has,
yes,
a pretty
eight,
minor key and kind of a haunting melody to it. And so the next two songs after that, I'm not as big of a fan of, because I felt like where that song landed, the next two songs became an epilogue of sorts.
Completely agree.
And I don't know if that song that was haunting, if you moved it up somewhere more toward the middle of the album, you'd have had a chance to recover and get back into the joy. Because track nine's joyful again. And
yeah,
track 10's interesting because it's mostly joyful until the big keyboard outro thing that kind of ends the album. And so maybe putting those two songs further apart would have helped with that. And it's not like I don't enjoy those songs. It's just that it takes a little dark turn right at the very end of the album. So it's almost like it's in two parts. In fact, at first I was thinking it was as early as track six. And then I realized, no, it's really, really late in the album where he does that. But I think the album's a lot of fun. I enjoyed all the songs. Thematically, it's mostly, I wrote a specific note about this, that I thought the whole album was difficult relationships. Maybe they're not the best fit. And we've had this conversation about another album where it was songs about Jane, where we said, oh, we know it's one person because of the title of the album. I almost read this that way. Like, I'm not sure this isn't also about one single person throughout the album, because it seems to be the same kind of discussion of the relationship.
Oh, interesting.
There's really only one song on here that's got a really
specific
story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's one on here that I like a lot because it reminded me of It's My Job. Oh, another Jimmy Buffett reference, where he says, he talks about a banker and he talks about a streetcar guy.
Oh, yeah.
There's a song in here where he talks,
yeah,
about four or five individual people. He's not talking about their jobs. He's talking about complicated things that happen in their life. And it's just a stack up of these similar stories about people having some complex difficulty in their life. I like that song a lot because of the fact that it wasn't about one person, one relationship. There's another song where clearly two people meet in a club and it comes from two angles. Angles, the guy's angle, the girl's angle, and then at the end it's their angle together, which I thought was cleverly written. And then the rest of them seem like relationship songs to me, but they play well. I'm not complaining about the fact that most of them are relationship songs. I'm just saying that there's a very common theme for the vast majority of the songs on the album.
Agree. First of all, I do have some beef with the sequencing. More detailed than what you said, but I'll bring it up when we get to the song, I think, that starts the chain reaction of poor sequencing.
I think we may have a match there.
Maybe. And I agree with you that a lot of these seem to be relationship songs, but for the most part, they seem to be very self-reflective. I mean, there are songs where he sings from the third person and he's clearly speaking about other people, sort of as an omniscient narrator. But for the most part, it's almost like journal entries about the relationships. He's not singing to a person. He's more journaling
his emotions.
That's
true.
It's a very self-reflective
song. He's not talking to somebody. He's talking about somebody.
Right, exactly. And there are a lot of lyrics in here that are sort of fuzzy, not as specific as I normally like my lyrics to be. It's not Tuesday on the Island in some instances.
Right, right.
But because the music is so compelling, that doesn't bother me the way it bothered me, for example, on the Tori Amos album, where that was clearly meant to be a lyrics and message-driven album, and the wishy-washy lyrics got in the way of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I absolutely do. We're not dealing with a metaphor album here.
No, but even some of the phrases he uses to describe what's happening are a little wishy-washy. You know, the message isn't always entirely clear cut.
Right.
But I didn't bump on that because the music is so compelling. It's not like the lyrics are the only thing you have to work with on this album.
Oh, it took me a long time to even dive into the lyrics. It's musically so engaging that that's really what you focus on.
Yeah.
And when you realize what the songs are about, the further you get into the album, the music's, it's not a mismatch, but you know what I'm trying to say. It's so joyful, and the
right.
songs aren't necessarily joyful songs, but the music's so bouncy and happy that you kind of get lost in what the songs are about with just an actual
yes.
listen to the album.
Yes, I have only a vague idea of what most of these songs are about, and that's totally fine because the music is why I'm here.
Thing.
That part of that is my lyric agnosticism, as we call it. But part of that is because some of the lyrics are vague, but that's okay because the music is so forward and compelling.
Well, why don't we get into the track by track?
Let's do it.
So, track number one, I believe you mentioned it already. It's called OK, It's All Right With Me.
OK, it's all right with me. Some things are just meant to be. It never comes easily. And when it does, I'm already gone. I'm practically never still. More likely to move until I end up alone.
So I started that one right from the beginning because I wanted you to hear exactly what I heard when I first played the album.
As you often do.
Big bouncy opening, keyboards pretty prominent in this, guitar less prominent. There's a lot going on in there musically, which I really appreciated. And again, this is a song about a complicated relationship, you know, kind of give and take relationship. And you would never know that from the music.
Right.
You would never pick that up from the actual sound of the song. It's just like a big poppy opening and it's great.
Very bouncy. I love that the music and his voice start almost exactly at the same time. He just gets right in there with the opening line, which is the title of the song, which I also find very fun. And I love the chorus of this one because he sounds so in love in the chorus. Even the music is very sweet. It's a sweet sound. And his voice, you can tell in his voice, he gets a little softer in the chorus. He's clearly singing about this woman he loves, Bernadette. And it's such a sweet, sweet chorus. I love it. It makes me feel happy.
The reason I said this is about a complicated relationship is the title, Okay, It's All Right With Me. This is not a perfect relationship. It's an okay relationship, and that's all right with me. And so when he sings that in the verses, he then comes up with the realization that it's okay with him, is why he sounds so in love, I think, in the choruses. He's like, this isn't great, but it's fine. He's playing this game in his head of like, is this okay? Yes, it is okay.
For me, it's slightly more sinister, which is she's driving the bus here. He just has to be okay with any amount of love that she's willing to give him. He's like holding on to every little droplet of love she's willing to give. And she seems to be quite withholding. And every time he comes back to her, it's less and less, right?
Right.
It might not be the same, but it's all right with me. And so to me, I think it's an unequal relationship where he loves her much more than she does. She's kind of stringing him along. And is he really okay with that? No, but he's so in love with her that
right.
he has to be okay with it in order to get time with her.
But what I meant was he's justifying that in his head. You can hear him struggling with it in the verses and then having the acceptance in the chorus.
Yeah.
Which is a cleverly written thing. By the way, these songs are structured a lot. The premise comes up in the first verse and the complication seems to be revved up in the second verse, the way he writes.
Mm-hmm.
throughout the album, this is like that. You're going to find that I had to pull a lot of clips for me out of the second verse
yeah.
because the more interesting elements of the story a lot of times are in the second verse. And in fact, that's true here, but I wanted that opening that I heard when I popped it in, because the lyrics I circled as my favorite in here are actually deeper in the song mm-hmm. because of that structure that he's kind of established in his writing,
mm-hmm.
which is a really good structure when you think about it. It's kind of a generic, simple opening, and then twist the dagger in the second verse.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. And by the way, most of these songs only have a couple of verses.
Yeah, like they're short songs.
If he has a third verse, he goes back and he repeats mm-hmm. the first verse.
Mm-hmm.
He's not one of these guys who drags the story on for like three acts in most of his songs. Kind of a two-act structure the way he's written these.
Yeah, well, he just shows he's concise in his storytelling, right? All right, how about we rate this first beer?
I think we should rate this first beer. So once again, let's remember we're drinking the Fortescue Fisherman's Ale, which is the golden ale. We described it as we started as being malty but not too sweet. That has held up as we've sat here. This hasn't warmed up a lot because it is a wee chilly in the tap room
today. It is literally below freezing.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Now, as we know, I'm not a gold nail kind of guy, but I'm going to give this one a 3.75. This is a really solid gold nail for me.
I'm going to give it the same rating, a 3.75. It's delicious. It's exactly as you said. It has a nice, subtle malt to it, not too sweet. I am getting still sort of an apple-y flavor. I don't know where that's coming from, but I think it just makes it a more well-rounded,
a
more well-rounded flavor. And I enjoyed that thoroughly and very easy to drink.
I would agree with you 100%. I like that a lot. I know my nephew, your cousin, Derek Jr.,
yeah. A name so nice, we had to use it twice.
Yeah. He was looking at our flight. I think he was being judgmental, and I was going to ask him about that, but he meandered off. So
I think it's because he didn't see anything dark, stouty, heavy, which is kind of the weather we're in. But
yeah. Well, there's always cleanup.
There's always cleanup.
A couple up there that I wouldn't mind trying at the end if we get a chance.
Peppermint stout for
me. So now the second one I picked out.
Oh boy, I'm excited for this one.
This was a substitution. The one I wanted, they were having an issue with the keg. So we had to quickly get a substitute. So this one is called It's a Wonderful Ale. It's a spiced ale, carryover from the Christmas season. And they were kind enough to rim that in cinnamon sugar. So it's a delightfully looking glass as well.
Listen, they do things, it seems to be a little non-traditionally around here. The peppermint stout, they will rim that in crushed up candy canes. And we've had multiple of our family members go up to the bar and ask for mixes of two of their beers. So there's clearly some fun experimentation going on here.
We are also here with the regulars.
It looks like the
regulars may have a separate set of rules when they open up early.
God, what Uncle Derek got, what did he get?
He got a Belgian mixed with a fruit beer, right?
Yeah, he got a Belgian topped off with a little bit of a passion fruit sour. And then my cousin Brooke got the peppermint stout mixed with the It's a Wonderful Ale, which we're about to drink. And she got the cinnamon rim. So
she's staring us down too. This is kind of creepy when everybody's staring at us.
She said half and half. So hers is truly half and half, whereas Uncle Derek's was mostly Belgian with a splash of the passion fruit on top. So what is going on here at Glasstown? But I'm excited for this. I've never seen any place rim a beer glass with anything. So I'm really intrigued with how this is going to be.
I had one somewhere and I can't remember where. Let me read the description. By the way, it's a 6.5% ABV. Our iconic holiday spiced ale is back. It's medium bodied and brewed with cinnamon, vanilla, allspice, nutmeg, and graham. I assume that might mean graham crackers, but it just says and graham. If you're looking to spice it up a little, ask for the cinnamon sugar rim.
Which we did.
We did.
Should we sample the rim before we sample the beer?
Don't you have to lick the rim and swallow? Oh, you're going to sample it first. Okay.
Tasty. Cinnamon sugar.
Go well on toast, right?
Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers to that. Now, that's really good. Now, the question is, I got a little sugar with that, so I have that issue that we talk about sometimes when we do these pairings. That's just really good.
Yeah, full stop.
But I have to keep sipping away from the sugar to get more of the beer because I keep getting the little bleed over from the sugar.
I won't lie, though. It's so good with the sugar.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it's so good.
That's really good. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a spiced ale.
It's a little out of character for March, but what am I going to do?
Come on. There's no more pretense. We've already told the listeners we're banking episodes. It's December 26th, people. Merry Christmas.
All right, got to move on to track two now. And track number two is called You Don't Have to Believe Me.
You don't have to believe me. I'm not gonna lie. I see all the attention. Get from a guy.
So again, another bouncy song about a complicated relationship. This one's more to me about a guy who's trying to impress a woman that's popular among a bunch of other guys. And he's sort of, I don't know, maybe in the friend zone, and he's trying to convince her that he's the guy for her. That's sort of the way I read those lyrics. You know, there's some organ in here. It's a real bouncy, fun, again, up-tempo, fun tune.
Yeah. I, for the most part, agree with your read of it. And that is what most of the lyrics sound like to me, except for the one line, which was in the clip you played. Before we build this love, please believe that you're good enough. So it sounds to me like they've already started something, but her low self-esteem is getting in the way of being a confident person who's ready to be in a relationship, right? Who's ready to experience love with another person, as opposed to working on self-love first.
I looked at it like he was an outsider looking in, but I agree with you about that, because the line coming out of what I played, you don't have to believe me, but I'm not often wrong. They've been taking advantage and it's gone on way too long, is what you're talking about, that she's been in a lot of relationships or whatever the situation is,
right,
and has been mistreated. And he's making the case that I'm not going to do that. But your point is valid, that I know what these other guys have been up to, and I'm not going to be like that.
Right.
But I viewed it as he was trying to use his honesty and his willingness to not mistreat her as an entree into a relationship.
Yeah, and that is how I have, for the most part, interpreted this song, other than that, you know, before we build this love. To me, that sounds like something's already established. This is a middle-of-the-road song for me on this album. I like it very much, but the line that I love, it might be my favorite line on the whole album, is the closing line of the song. You sure better believe me when I tell you your mind's what's hot. I think that is a great... Yeah. Lovely line. What girl doesn't want to be told that? That is amazing.
Well, and I feel like the reason so many of his relationships are complicated is because he's dealing with bright, intelligent, opinionated women.
Yeah.
Nobody's playing second fiddle to him.
No, he sees women as equals, right? Which is a good thing.
Right.
I'm not saying that's bad. But yes, when two people have complicated emotions, and when both people recognize that the other person has complicated emotions, it's even more complicated, right? Especially because I think intelligent people are more prone to mental illness, right?
I don't know about that. Maybe more things to deal with, but not more prone, I don't think.
You don't think so?
I don't. I would say that that goes back to why the song Okay and That's All Right is interesting, because these are not perfect relationships, and that's okay, which is kind of the thesis statement of the album, right, in a lot of ways. By the way, I don't think we mentioned, there were only two singles from this album, and the first song was one of the two. And neither one of them did gigantic numbers on the charts,
right, yeah,
as I recall, looking through the charts. I was kind of surprised there was only two singles. You know, there's six or seven on here that are... You just said,
gems.
Oh, this is in the middle of the road for me, or this is that. In trying to pick out my top three, I could have picked it out of six. So really,
yes.
I had like a top six or seven and a bottom three,
yeah,
oddly enough. I couldn't really parse out of the ones that were in the top two-thirds of the album for me much of a distinction in how much I liked them or didn't like them.
They are similar sounding, consistent, I guess. Is
yeah,
it?
They're not samey.
Samey is not the right word.
No.
They're consistently upbeat, poppy, happy, fun, bouncy. And so, yes, it is hard to distinguish between some
right.
of them if you're not diving into lyrics, or if there's not like a particular instrumental section that you're really fond of.
I think the way I came to the ones that I picked was either something about the lyrics that really stood out to me that I liked a lot, or maybe it was something just a little different in the music that made it stand out a little bit. And that was just your opinion about what you like among those songs,
right,
because they're all pretty top-notch productions.
Right.
So that takes us to the third track on the album. The third track of the album is called Outside Villanova, which is interesting because if there is one connection to this album, I went to high school not too far from here, St. Augustine Prep. I think we talked about it several times on the show. That was a school that was run by Augustinian monks. And that school had an affiliation with Villanova University up in Philadelphia. And so that title jumped out at me the very first time I saw it,
yeah,
just because of my connection. All right, going to move on now to track three. Now that we've had a very long discussion about the,
the
origin
title.
Of the name, Outside Villanova.
Black and white, she's got a
So I don't know if the long clip gave it away or not, but this was my favorite song on the album.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah, that was my favorite song on the album. Why does that surprise you?
Because it's my least favorite song on the album.
Is it really?
I think it's disgusting.
Are you talking about lyrically or musically?
Oh yeah, lyrically. I know it is a story.
Yes.
But I have thoughts. Let's hear yours first.
Yeah, I agree with the story, you know, is a little awkward, but
awkward. It's a crime.
It's got a interesting musical structure to it that made it stand out for me among, you know, seven songs that sounded kind of similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was something about the rhythm of it, I think,
yes,
that was really interesting to me. Not Latin sounding, that's probably not a good word for it, but it had some sort of a backbeat to it that was a little flip on a normal rhythm. And
yeah,
I found that engaging.
Yeah.
And so in parsing through the seven songs that all could have been in my top three, this one, every time I listened to it, I just was really engaged by it musically. Now, yes, when I read the lyrics and realized that it's not a great story for that really engaging music, I didn't have a problem with that. I mean, it's a complicated story, but no, that's my favorite.
I agree with you. Despite it being my least favorite, it's very compelling musically. I enjoy the song. I sing along to it. It's a fun one. But it is not subtle in what it's about. I mean, it is up to a point, but then when he throws in the line, she's getting older and legal soon, that's when it all flips on its head. And I actually did some digging into the meaning of these lyrics because I wanted to make sure that what I was reading into it was actually what the story was. And people on the internet found connections that I hadn't even found. So first, I want to read a quote from Mr. Hutchinson himself about the origin of this song. That song was about a Lolita-type girl who was just a strange girl that I met after a show. She was really coming on strong, and I thought it was probably a better idea to just go home and write a song about her than find out what was going on there. You think? Here's my biggest problem with the song. It's about someone who's having a relationship with an underage girl. That is clear from the lyrics. She will be legal soon, which means she's not currently legal, which means the narrator of the song's engaging in a crime. But even so, his paranoia surrounding the situation and his guilt and remorse are solely based on the possibility that he might get caught. He talks about his coworkers thinking he's a jerk, and he talks about maybe the cops being called. If he upsets her, she might call the cops on him. His guilt and remorse has nothing to do with the fact that he's raping an underage girl. And I don't like that at all. I think the narrator, now again, he's writing about a character, but I think the narrator should have had more self-reflection to know that this is wrong, even if you were not getting caught for it. I think the casualness with which,
right.
With which he's describing this relationship is really disgusting. And the fact that he described this girl as a Lolita type girl, that rubs me completely the wrong way. Because, and I would like to put in a plug for the Lolita podcast, which is a great podcast that I listen to by a really incredible writer and podcaster, Jamie Loftus. And I think I might have plugged it actually on the
police,
episode, because in Don't Stand So Close to Me, there's a lyric about Nabokov. But in that podcast, there's a lot of discussion about how in the adaptations, Lolita's made out to be sort of playing into it. Or she's this sexified little girl when she's a child who is being victimized. So for Eric Hutchinson himself, this is a direct quote, to look at a child and think, oh yeah, that's the kind of girl who's a victim. That really, really bothers me. And so the backstory of it and the lack of remorse of the character, it just is so disgusting to me. And so that is why this is my least favorite song.
I would just like to point out that this is your album.
I love this song. Like, it's a great song.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
But it's just not right. It's just not right. Like, I wish there was a little more self-reflection about the wrongs he was actually committing against this child.
The narrator. Or the artist. See, that's where you go.
But he himself, you know, it's probably a better idea to go write about her than to, you know, explore what was going on there. Yeah, of course. She's a child.
Right.
Ugh, the quote is so bothersome to me. Like, all of it.
Well, you should have done less research. You'd feel better about yourself.
I guess I should have.
You'd feel better about your musical choices.
Maybe. You're the one who's always asking me to do more research.
Yeah, well, now I'm sorry you did. That dragged me down.
Maybe it shouldn't have been your favorite.
Yeah. You're making me rethink my song choice.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about my next favorite one, track number 4, Food Chain. So again, musically, this is one that had a different kind of a rhythm section to it that I really found appealing. So this was my third favorite song on the album. I also like the theme of it, using the food chain as a reference for who's eating who today, who's on the top of the food chain,
right,
which I really found is a very clever way to explain this sort of back and forth relationship that he found himself in this particular song. So I liked it lyrically, I liked it musically, and so I gave it a number 3 on my chart.
This is my favorite song.
Okay.
Yep, that's
now we're back
my
on
least
track.
Favorite. I agree with you about the food chain metaphor, the dog-eat-dog world, and day-to-day we go from bottom to top. It's different from day-to-day, and it, as usual, reminds me a lot of the evils of capitalism.
This is Pops on Hops, where no one is saved.
This is Pops on Hops, where no one is safe.
But listen to this set of lyrics. This chain just eats away at the people who use it. No one's gonna say that it's easier losing touch with who we need when it's lonelier on the outside. So it's detrimental, but you can't escape it.
Right.
Because everyone you need, like your community, is all participating in it. So if you cut ties with the food chain, right, you no longer have access to your support system. It's damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Well, that's exactly right. If you don't participate in it, you're the bottom of the food
chain. Exactly, right.
And the only way to get to the top of the food chain is to step on everybody that you just described that's in your circle of friends. That's the sad reality of it from a broader perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, this was more about two people in a relationship going top to bottom in the relationship. But the broader sort of how we live our lives, which brings up, you know, why we struggle so much with equity issues in this country, right? Because it's like, I have to have somebody to step on. So I'll blame that group or I'll blame this group, as opposed to just recognizing that maybe if we just change the entire approach, we wouldn't have to step on anybody.
Right.
Except maybe billionaires.
Oh, I'd love to step on some billionaires.
Would you?
Oh, man. Elon Musk would be my first choice.
You could have an Elon Musk step on him.
A dunk tank.
Yeah, I'd dunk him. All right.
All right, we got to rate this beer.
Let us rate this. You know, this is really good. So now what I've done is I've worked enough sugar off the edge to kind of get a sense of the beer without the sugar.
I have a sugarless side.
It's a strong, strong beer. If I had tenths, I would probably give it like a 3.9. I'm going to give it a 4. It's clearly a 4 with the sugar.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So,
but what I tried to do is go, without that sugar rim, what's the beer about? It's got a really full, robust flavor. It's just a little bit of aromatic taste to it, just a little bit. Not like with a Belgian. You can definitely taste some of the spices they referred to in their notes. So yeah, I really, really like this one. And I've had quite a few holiday and winter beers this past holiday season. This stands up as one of the better ones I've had, honestly. It's a really solid, solid entry.
I like that it's fairly light for a spice ale. The spices are quite subtle. I mean, I have to kind of swirl it around my mouth, kind of hold it in my mouth for a bit to pick up on the spice flavor.
I think
flavor.
That's where I'm saying the word aromatic.
Yeah.
It's almost like...
You need a little bit of air incorporation.
Yes, you have to re-inhale the air
for sure.
To pick up some 100%. Of the spices.
100%. And I don't mind that. They're not punching you in the face. It's, again, very easy to drink, especially for a winter ale, which is usually like really heavy on the flavor. This is nice and light. It doesn't have a ton of sweetness on its own, which is why I think the Sugar Rim works so well, because it adds that little bit of sweetness to
That's right.
But on its own, I'm going to give it a 3.75. And it would be a 4 with the sugar, 100%.
And I'd probably go higher with the sugar. I'm giving it a 4 anyway. And let's remind everybody that your base point of I Would Drink It Again is 3, whereas mine's 3.5.
So that's correct.
Your 3.75 in many ways is even maybe a higher rating than my 4. So just to put that in perspective for people. All right, moving on to the third slot on our flight board today. This is specifically for you, Abigail. This is the Sparkles Sky Dancer. This is
how kind of you to think of me.
Well, I needed a sour in my life.
Oh. I'm really intrigued by this one, actually.
So this is a strawberry shortcake sour ale. It's described as tart and slightly sweet, bursting with flavor from strawberry puree. And we've had lots of experience with strawberry and strawberry puree over the years that we've been doing this. It's a 5.5% ABV. It's described as seasonal. I don't know that it's strawberry season in South Jersey as we're recording this.
I would say probably not.
Maybe getting closer as we're releasing this.
Yes, that's very good.
That's really, really good. First of all, I want you to notice how clear that beer is.
Yes.
Because I remember the other one we had that was strawberry puree, which was down at Overflow Brewing in St. Petersburg, was cloudy. But they made a lot more of those kind of milkshake sours and a lot of sour beers that had a cloudier quality to them, as I'm recalling.
Well, and I could be misremembering. Did they puree the strawberries themselves at Overflow?
Yes, that's the group that did that themselves.
So this brewery might have purchased puree or frozen puree, and that may have been the difference in a processing thing.
I'm thinking filtering.
Yeah, that too.
That the other one we had was unfiltered. But going back to where I was leading with that is it does not taste like an artificial strawberry flavor at all.
No, it doesn't. But it does taste like shortcake, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
Does it have lactose in it?
It says contains lactose.
Okay.
With two asterisks because of the lactose intolerant, I'm assuming. Is that what we're worried about?
I would assume so. So I like sours that contain lactose. It's heavier on the sour than the creaminess. I like that there's just a touch of that creaminess to kind of mellow out the sour. But I mean, the sour is really strong, and that's what I like in a sour beer. So I'm very much enjoying this. And I think it's amazing that they got the shortcake flavor in there. I don't know how they did that.
So we're 3 for 3 by the sounds of it here today with the flight. And of course, I feel like the fourth one, we're going to have some divergence. But
I would assume
we'll talk about the fourth one when we get
there. When we get there, yeah.
So we're moving on to track 5, which will put us about halfway through the album. This is the first single off the album, and that's the song Rock and Roll.
And then a wink on the break, drinks and drinking at the bar, we cash the flow, shot to shot, it's getting hot, advance the plot, see how far it's gonna go, all the pencil, ditch the friends and grab a cab, another chance, achieve romance. Does it count cause the room is spinning? Nothing to lose and now they both are winning. And they fall in love as they fall in love, they sing. If they wanna rock, they rock. If they wanna roll, they roll. They can roll with the punches as long as they feel like they're in control. And if they wanna stay, they stay. If they wanna go, they go. They don't care how they get there, long as they get somewhere they know.
So let me start by saying that I think this is one of the better written songs on the album, because this is a story that the two first verses are about a guy and then about a girl, and the third verse brings those two characters together. They're both clubbing, basically. They're both going to a club by the sounds of it, the way the original verses go. Then it gets to this third verse, which is what I played, which is structurally different as a verse. It almost has a hip-hop quality to it, the way it's written. So the two things dovetail into a verse that's not even structured like the first two verses, which I thought was really fun.
Yeah.
It almost plays like a bridge.
It does play like a bridge.
It's verse, chorus, verse, chorus. this big bridge that really finishes the story, and then
a final chorus
back
yeah.
to the chorus. This is a really strong, wonderful, wonderful song. And it made me think of something we've talked about before, which was, what's the origin of the term rock and roll? And I have said before that it was basically a euphemism for sex back in the 30s and 40s. And it's not that anymore, right? It's been watered down by, I'll say, corporate rock over the years, kind of.
Oh, capitalism again.
Mellowed what that term actually meant. And yet his chorus reflects that again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's about two people who've hooked up, and at the point of the third verse, and they fall in love as they fall in bed, they sing, if you want to rock, you rock. If you want to roll, you roll.
Yeah.
And it completely brings back the history of the term rock and roll.
Yeah.
So I think this is fabulous.
This is my third favorite song on the album, and it has been since the beginning. This has always been one of my favorites. You know, we've had a bunch of complicated songs so far. This is extremely uncomplicated.
Yes.
It's two people being confident, being where they are, and getting what they want. And there's something really comforting about that, right? If I just go somewhere with confidence, I'm going to get what I want. I can roll with the punches as long as I feel like I'm in control. And I think that's a really empowering message. Even if it is just about, you know, going to the club and getting sex, it's still about like the embodiment of confidence that's going to get you where you want to go. And I really like that.
It reminded me a lot in some ways of that song off the Pink album where she went clubbing.
Yes.
And she was,
you plus your hand.
Yes. And she was blowing guys off.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of confidence in the club. And here are two people bringing that to the club to go get what they want.
Yeah.
And they both leave with what they want
yeah.
together, which is why it's such a nicely written song, right?
Yeah. It's uncomplicated and it feels great, you know? It's nice to feel like that could happen to you once in a while.
Well, you got to get more clubs. I guess. I'm not authorizing that. I didn't say that. All right, going to move on now to track number 6, the simply titled Oh. So I think we talked about this a little bit before. This is the song that tells a bunch of stories of desperate people, maybe 4, 5, 6 stories throughout this song. In each of the verses is a separate individual. This is my fourth favorite. I like the structure of it musically. Again, rhythmically, I think this is a really strong song. And then I like that writing. Like I said before, it kind of reminded me of It's My Job by Jimmy Buffett in
yeah.
the sense that it's a bunch of different people with different jobs and they're all happy because it's my job. Or not happy because it's my job, whatever
right.
it was.
Right.
And here it's the same kind of thing. It's like, here's a little vignette. Here's another little vignette. Nothing really ties it together at the end too
right.
much, except the fact that they're all on the same desperate path, I guess, is
yeah.
the way to think of it, regardless of what their background was in the stories. So I thought that was really a fun concept for a song, especially in an album that doesn't have a lot of that.
This is also my on the cusp song. To me, the roles that these people play in the narrator's life are kind of like the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Like they each bring a little lesson to his life. I feel like the origin of this song was he thought of phrases or little quips that sparked something in his mind or made him think. And we talked about this on the Matt Nathanson album. Feels like someone trying to write deep poetry for the first time. This to me reads kind of the same way. He thought of a little quip that he was like, oh, oh, well, that's quite clever. And then he just put all of them into a song. But the fact that they're all different characters that he's encountered on his travels through life makes it feel like they're not guardian angels, but they're like fairy godmothers. They kind of pop up and they give him a little life lesson, and then they fade into the background. Like, he doesn't know any of these people, but he remembers very specifically, word for word, the things they've told him and the lessons he's taken from that. So while I do think the writing is a little like, oh, I'm 14 and this is really deep, I'm very charmed by it. So I do very much enjoy this song.
But I think it did come down to the very last thing he says, which is a summary of that. She told me you look the same. I said, I'm now a new man. She asked, how does that work? I started giving a damn.
Yeah.
And I think that was the payoff of having these life lessons that you described, was that I started thinking about these people and it made me grow as a person.
Yeah.
I didn't have the same vibe about trying to be deep for a 14-year-old like you were suggesting, because I thought some of the stories had a little bit of irony in them, which I thought was kind of fun. Like the cop.
They all had irony in them. But, you know, it's the fact that the people don't have names. It's clear he doesn't know any of these people. They sort of just popped into his life. He describes them as their profession or sometimes their ethnicity, and then they're gone. He's not using them, but he is essentially poaching their life lesson from them, and then he doesn't see them ever again.
Right. But it causes him to grow as a person.
Yeah.
Even those little encounters.
Right.
You always hear those stories about... I mean, one of the ones I could share with you was when I was practicing pediatrics out in Los Angeles. I went in to see a patient one time. So I used to fill in at a clinic that loved having me, and I did a bunch of shifts over there. So I go into this room, and I used to sit a lot on the exam table next to the kids. Because when you go into the room, you know, there's not too many chairs. You know, in pediatric medicine, there's a parent, too. So they're
right.
In a chair. Kids are on a table. Anyway, I would sit on the exam table next to the kids. And so I got up on this table next to this kid, and he looked at his mom and he grinned. And I go, what's going on? And she said, when we saw your name, he said to me, that's the guy that sits on the table. The reason I bring that up
that's
is because you forget that little things like that do make an impact on people, and you don't even think about it. Oh, I just sit on the table because it's easier for me to see the mom and the patient from the table than the chair I'm supposed to sit in over here with my back to everybody. And so you do something that subtle and people remember that, and it has an impact on their lives. So I feel like some of the lines in the song are a lot like that. He's getting these random bits of information from people that he's having a passing acquaintance with, and he's kind of compiled that into this really cool little song.
Yeah.
So that's the track. Oh!
Exclamation point.
Exclamation
Let's point. Not forget.
Not question mark, question mark.
Different punctuation today.
That takes us on to track number 7 as we roll through the album. This is the song All Over Now. So this is my second favorite song on the album.
Oh, nice.
It's more acoustic guitar driven, which I think is really cool. I love the chorus. Again, these choruses have such great hooks in them.
They do.
Consistently. This is another one. And this is in some ways similar lyrically to the previous song in that it's a bunch of stories of daily life, but from a bunch of different people used to describe his complicated relationship that he's in. So things are going on around him that he's pulling in to maybe metaphorically describe his relationship. But I think the song's delightful. What I will say is that this is the last of those. So this package that we just went through from song 1 through 7 is very consistent. And much like we're going to change gears with the beer going into the IPA finally at the end, we're going to also...
Tie that back.
We're going to... The last third of the album and the last beer are going to be consistent in that regard for Abigail, I'm afraid. But anyway, I think this is a great song. So it's my second favorite.
This is the one for me that starts the chain reaction of poor sequencing. Because to me, this song feels like it could be a final track. And every song after this also feels like it could be a final track. So the last four songs of the album have kind of these false endings where I feel satisfied. I feel like the album is complete. It feels like a satisfying close. And then you get another song. And that is a turnoff for me. Not because I dislike the songs after this. In fact, my second favorite song is in the last three tracks. But because I feel like this is a complete package after this song, after the next song, after the ninth song, and after the tenth song. And I just don't like that kind of like, oh, now it's over. Oh, nope. Oh, no. Okay, now it's over. Now it's actually over. I think if these four songs were resequenced into the first six somehow, that would eliminate some of that for me. And I think it would help me feel that the actual whole album of 10 songs is a complete package. As opposed to, it could be a 7-song, or an 8-song, right, or a 9-song, or a 10-song album, and all of those would make me feel complete.
This song could have been a closing song on the album that ended it in a positive way, like the vast majority of the songs, and it's called It's All Over Now, which is a great title to end the album on, so I know where you're coming from.
Right, and it has that long outro it's just like the bass solo. There's some closing drums in there that just make it feel final.
Right.
It transitions extremely well directly into the next song. There's no gap in the CD recording, at least, between this song and the next one. But because of that long outro, it feels final to me. But I could say that about any song between now and the last one.
Well, and the problem is the last one, not only does it end like the closing of an album, the last chunk of the song actually gears shift completely. It's almost all minor key organ outro that sounds like the end of an album.
Yeah.
And that song would be hard to put anywhere on the album because of that structure. So I feel like that one has to be at the end. It's almost like this song at 7 and the next song at 8 should be 5 and 6.
Almost like a side one closer, it would be great.
This would be a side one closer, and then that minor key thing to start the second side. You'd have to end, I think, with the song that's in the final slot, even though anything from here out could be the closer. I think he boxed himself in with that, and that had to be the last song on the album just because of the way it's structured. Where else can you stick it?
Yeah.
And I didn't pick that closing part as a clip, but we may have to go and pull the track and actually play that piece I'm talking about.
It's fabulous. I love it.
Right. But the problem is, it sounds like the end.
Yeah, but this sounds like the end too.
Yeah.
And that's my problem.
I know.
Other than that, I love the song. I love that it ends on a bass solo. I sometimes, and we've talked about this before, I have a lot of trouble hearing bass lines in songs. You played for me a couple of YouTube videos recently where it visually showed the bass line.
Yeah.
And that helps focus me in the bass line. But in most cases, I find it very hard to discern bass lines in songs. So the fact that this was a bass solo to close it out, it's the first time I've really ever appreciated a bass line.
It's funny you said that. I was exchanging bass tracks from James Jamerson with Jack Cornell.
Yes, world-renowned bass player Jack Cornell.
That's how that came to pass. Somebody had sent me something with a bass line, and I sent it. I said, this made me think of you, and then he sent me one back. And I don't know, we exchanged two or three back and forth. It's pretty funny, but those are well done. Those visual representations of the bass tracks are really well done. The ones you're referring to.
Yeah.
Some of them were isolated, some of them no.
Yeah. Even in the ones where it wasn't isolated, like, it's still hard for me to hear. Having the visual does help, but it's still difficult for me to hear that. I don't know if it's just below the range that I can really hear or what, but it's difficult. And so I enjoy.
I think that depends on the mix.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's why the ones that were isolated were interesting to me, because you could really hear it and focus in on it, but you don't have a sense of how big of an impact it was on the overall song when it's isolated. Well, that's the 7th track, so we have 3 left. I think we need to rate our fabulous Sparkles a Sky Dancer before moving on to
Indeed.
The Pale Ale and the Pale Ending to the album. I'm going with you first. What do you got?
This is my first 4.0 of the day.
All right.
I really enjoyed this one. Yeah. It tastes like a strawberry shortcake. I'm always amazed at how certain beers that have different malt qualities, like the graham cracker one, right? But this tastes like shortcake. And I've had beers before where it tastes like pie crust. And it's like the precision of the malt to get that flavor. It's just amazing to me every time. This is outstanding. And it's a 4.0.
I'm going to give it a 4.25.
Wow.
Again, probably on par with your 4, to be honest with
you. Yes, for sure.
It's probably between a 4 and a 4 and a quarter, but it's like a 4.2. So I'm going to round it up to a 4.25 because, as we know,
we don't have 10 points.
I have 10 points here.
Untapped, why don't you sponsor us?
But for purposes of today, we're going to go with a 4.25. And I like everything about it. I like that you taste the strawberry without it being artificial tasting. I like the smoothness of it as a result of the lactose. And I'm fascinated by how clean it is compared to a lot of sours we've had recently. These milkshake IPAs,
yeah,
milkshake sours that are super cloudy. So clearly it's been filtered. And maybe if we get a chance, rumor is floating around that we may be able to talk to one of the brewers and the owner at some point. So we'll see how that plays out. But in any event, really like that a lot.
That's a theme. All of these have been very clean drinking. Everything leaves the palate very quickly. And I think that's an underrated quality of beer, because if you like something, it makes you want to go back for more. And if you don't like something, guess what? You don't have to taste it for that long. So a clean, you know, leaves the palate quickly beer, I think, is one of the best qualities of a beer.
Well, speaking of that, let's move on to our final selection of the day.
Okay. Which probably will not be clean drinking.
Which is probably going to throw you off, because just by name alone,
I have
my concerns for you. And this is called Into the Dankness.
Yes.
This is a double IPA, 7.8% ABV. It's described as dank and tropical double IPA, hopped with Citra, Mosaic, Amarillo, and Idaho 7 hops.
Certainly smells hoppy.
Well, that's not fair. Don't be pulling rank over
there. It's not my fault you don't get to experience one entire dimension of beer. Oh. Okay, yeah. So this is a double IPA, yes?
Yes, it is.
Is it juicy? I missed that part. Is it
it's
hazy?
It's not described as juicy.
No,
it's
normal.
It's not.
It's pretty hoppy. Now, I will say, the taste leaves the palate quickly.
It doesn't hang for a long time.
So, much like the others, I find that to be a positive quality. In this case, it's because I don't necessarily like it that much.
This is Pops on Hops, where no one is safe.
So, it's leaving the palate quickly.
Well,
but
I like it.
I knew you would. I knew you would. So here's the other thing we talk about a lot. This is hoppy without being bitter.
That's correct.
But it is very, very hoppy.
Very hoppy.
And that's just not my favorite flavor in a beer. So,
well, that's why we saved it to the end.
Well, yeah. We always get one for you, and we always get one for me. So this is yours today.
And I did pair it with three songs that will also leave an aftertaste in your mouth.
Okay, I guess so.
For good or for bad, which is a good thing, I guess, if you like the song, and a bad thing
I
if you don't like
it.
So we're going to move on now to track number 8, It Hasn't Been Long Enough.
I feel as if I spoke too soon and ruined the whole afternoon. A feeling that we're more than doomed is creeping up inside. And good as it was bound to be, there's something about you and me. It's negative in chemistry, which makes it hard to hide. And it's no surprise when lights are falling, it's bound to be a way, some primal calling. No, it hasn't been long enough to even begin to think it's alright. I'm only concerned with the way we end up. Oh, I think I've been wrong enough to know when I'm right. So put up a fight if you must, but we know that our trust is undone. It hasn't been long enough.
This, to me, sounds nothing like the preceding 7 songs. It seemed like a left turn to me. It's a minor key. This is my least favorite song on the album because of that.
Interesting.
Now, again, because I've had a string of seven, like if I had a string of four and this came up, maybe I wouldn't have had that same kind of reaction to it. There are similar lyrics in the preceding seven songs, written with those bouncy pop structures. And here, because it's in a minor key and it seems more profoundly sad to me, I had a negative reaction to it. From the very first time I played the album. In fact, if you look at my notes, look at my track selection list, you'll notice that...
Oh my gosh.
Look at the notes.
Stars on every song except this one. That's amazing.
And that was the first time through. I never recovered from that. Maybe it's placement. Maybe it's not. I didn't have a good reaction to it the first time through and never since. I see the grin. I know where this is going. Go ahead.
This is my second favorite song on the album.
All right.
Maybe because it is different that I just was instantly drawn to it. The saxophone, we have not heard saxophone on this album yet. It's fascinating to me. The opening piano riff that then becomes a little faster in tempo, and it's clear he's hitting the keys a little harder throughout the song. It has almost a spooky, haunting quality to it. It just gets under my skin. It's so good. I love the minor key, and this is the first time we've heard, I mean, he has an emotional voice. It's clear that he is singing with emotion, but this is the first time we've heard this particular emotion on this album. He almost sounds desperate to me, and that is so captivating to me in this song. His voice sounds amazing. That really fantastic piano riff, the saxophone, all of it. I love, love this song.
But there are other songs where he describes his desperation in the lyrics.
But his voice doesn't sound desperate.
That's what I'm saying.
He always sounds upbeat. He always sounds positive so far. But in this one, you can tell that he's really feeling the darkness of the music. And it's just so fascinating to me.
I just want you to picture in your head, if you can, what he would have sounded like singing the song, You Don't Have to Believe Me, in this style.
Yeah, I don't think I would have liked that as much. But because this is about the end of a relationship and not the beginning of a relationship, the desperation just hits different, you know? When you're trying to hold on to something that's clearly failing, that's a different kind of desperation than wanting to start something that isn't there yet.
I understand that. What I'm saying is that he could have done this kind of style on that other song, and I wouldn't have liked that one as much either. If the lyrics were identical and it was in this style of music, I'm not sure I would have liked it
as much. We can't know that.
I just told you.
We can't, though. You don't know what that song would have sounded like in a minor key.
I have an idea. I'm just saying my reaction to the same set of lyrics based on the musical style can have a big impact.
Oh, sure. And I'm saying it in a positive way.
I understand that. I'm saying on this album, this is kind of an outlier.
Absolutely. I think that's part of why it's so captivating to me.
Yeah, and I think that's part of why I didn't like it as much. Seven songs in.
You're a fan of consistency. I'm a fan of diversity.
I'm a fan of if you're going to have seven happy songs or seven joyful sounding songs and then throw them at track E, something that sounds a little more haunting and sad.
Listen, I'm not quarreling with you on the sequencing. I have issues with the sequencing too.
The reason it's jumped out at me so oddly the first time I listened to it was like, where the heck did that come from? And I don't know that I would have had that same reaction if it was the third or fourth song on the album. Because a lot of artists do that, right? Here's my one style, here's my 1A style. And then you kind of bounce back and forth a little bit, or you space those out. It's Corey Chisel kind of thing. We talked about, there was an album we did not too long ago where I said there's three distinct styles here.
Oh, that was Maroon 5.
The Maroon 5 album.
Yeah, angry, ballady, and just basic rock.
Those things were mixed up together as you went through the album. And so it's like, oh, you can pick out what's going on here. I see the strengths of the artist in these different styles. I'm not saying he's a one-note guy. That's not what I'm trying to say. But he's pitched himself that way by going seven songs in before this happens. And that's why I had such a negative reaction to it. All right. That takes us to track number 9 called Back to Where I Was.
New life decides to come through the front door and make a switch we'd shown respect before. Though I don't have much of a choice, offended, that's because every time I start to change my mind again, gets me back to where I was.
All right, so that was track 9, Back to Where I Was. This is, I'll say, bottom third, right? Because I put 3 songs down near the bottom. This is not a bad song.
No.
It's a little slower, tempo-wise. Same kind of thing, another complicated relationship song. The only thing that I thought was interesting about this song was there's some lyrics in here to make me think that there's a relationship that is dependent on a baby that may be coming.
Yeah, no, I totally read that there is a baby coming. I don't know if I interpreted that the relationship is dependent on that. I think I interpreted that the relationship maybe is revitalized or they are seeing things in a new light because they have this new life coming on the way. I mean, they reference the new life repetitively.
I just felt with some of the lyrics like the relationship wasn't on the best status and the baby was going to not dictate that they were going to stay together, but was going to change the dynamic of that relationship for good or for bad because they were going to stay together because of the baby. I thought that was a great complicated story.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that as a lyrical structure. And it's subtle. It's not.
It is.
Doesn't knock you over the head that that's
right.
What's going on.
Right.
You can throw terms around like new life to kind of imply that it's a baby without really saying, hey, here comes a baby.
Yeah.
So I did like that writing. I just feel like it's in a weird place.
It is. It is.
And so you lose some of that because of the placement, because it's between these two darker songs.
Right.
And that's why the sequencing may have put the song in a better light or a different light if it was somewhere else on the album.
I agree. It's in an odd spot. It's kind of sandwiched, unfortunately, between two songs that are very not joyful and then this lovely song about having a baby and that changing the way you see your relationship and your life. I think that's a really sweet concept for a song. But this for sure fell towards the bottom for me just because of the placement and because in comparison to the other sweet upbeat songs, it is slower and it is not as bouncy, not as poppy. It's like still upbeat. It's just not as bubbly and over to the top on the pop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which is an interesting choice because lyrically, this should be one of the more bubbly songs on the album, right? This should be more bubbly than the Villanova song.
Yeah, yeah. It's about new hope. Maybe we can do for this baby better than what we have. And there's an inherent hopefulness there that's just not reflected in the tempo of the song, I think.
Totally agree with you on that. That takes us to the final track on the album, the one we've referenced multiple times during our discussion, and that's the track You've Got You. So what's interesting about this song is, again, another complicated relationship. I don't need to get into all that because it's thematically like a lot of the songs on the record. This part of the song is not unusual in any way.
Right.
It's that it takes a turn, which I guess I'll have to pull the whole song out, play that end clip, because it shifts gears. Like the final act of this is this darker organ-driven funeral dirge almost to end the album.
I don't know about funeral dirge. That's a little dramatic.
It sounds sort of like a horror movie outro.
For sure, yeah.
And it's a weird choice. And so consequently, you kind of have to stick it at the end because it's not like anything else on the album and it's a perfect ending to the album. But once you paint yourself in that corner, you don't have a whole lot of options, right? So again, this ends up in the bottom third, partly placement, partly the structure and that kind of left turn musically in the song. And so my reaction to the album overhaul was I'm flying along with 7 of these songs that are bouncy. high energy, fun, tempo wise, not very different, right? So they play like a very consistent package. And then you get the doorstop of that one song. And then the next two are just an epilogue to that. And so that's not fair to these two songs. And I think, like you have suggested, and we've been talking about in other parts of the discussion, it's a sequencing thing. I don't really have a beef with this song. I maybe gave it short shrift because of where it's located.
And I love it. And I love the outro. He's got more of his desperation in his voice in this one again. It's interesting to me that in an album of complicated conversations and complicated relationships, this one, he seems to have no complication at all. You are to blame is the message of this song. And it's not that I'm saying that's the way we all, you know, we should all understand nuance. But I think it's interesting that in this last track, it's the final straw. He's like, there's nothing complicated about this. You are the one who made this happen. You're the reason that this relationship isn't going the way it should. And there's something comforting about that certainty. You know what I mean? He's very certain of himself. And I think the juxtaposition between the very upbeat body of the song and then the long, long, almost spooky outro is super interesting. And
yeah,
I really enjoyed that. I don't know.
Because
I think he's just having fun.
Your point again about whether he's right or wrong, it's interesting to say you're to blame. From a mental health standpoint, isn't that the best way to walk away from a relationship? I'll make the argument that if it was a complicated relationship and you were at fault for some things, maybe you should learn to be better in the future. But there's also, from another mental health standpoint, you know, you see all these memes about shifting the blame on other people so that you could be a strong person and that kind of thing. And I feel like that's what the song is like. It's him saying, this is all on you so I can have a fresh start. And whether he's right or wrong about that, that maybe is not a bad approach for your own mental health.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's okay. Like, it's comforting, right?
Okay. So why end it with such an uncomfortable... Does the musical thing at the end underscore that that's a house of cards he's built about the way this ended? Or what? I don't know what that choice is. You know, just so we know what we're talking about, let me play just a piece of that so that we can put that in perspective. Such a weird, odd way to end that song.
I love it.
I'm not saying I dislike it. I'm just saying I'm saying two things. One is, does that musical outro symbolically mean something that contradicts some of what he's been saying in the lyrics? Because it's a really dark thing. And two, that is such a quintessential outro, not just to the song, but to the entire album. It has to be the last song,
yeah.
Which means your ability to resequence the album as a whole is limited because I feel like this has to be here.
Sure, that's fine.
But I think breaking these three up would emphasize their strengths and not have that first block say, this is who I am for
right.
Seven songs. And then when the interesting stuff comes up, you're kind of like, well, I'm not ready for that because I thought you were this.
That's fair. That makes sense to me. Yeah. Like I said, the sequencing on this is not ideal for me either. We've had some interesting ideas in here about removing 9 from between the sandwich of the two darker songs would allow it to breathe a little bit.
I agree.
I'm sure I would appreciate that song more. I'm sure you would appreciate that song more. And I don't think it's a great idea to have those two dark songs so close together.
Absolutely not.
Because I'm sure you would appreciate both of those more if they were sprinkled throughout. So, agreed. The sequencing leaves something to be desired. But I do just love the minor key bits on this album because they are so unique to this album.
No, I know.
And every time I hear something different, it allows me to sink my teeth into it. And I really enjoy that.
Well, let's quickly rate this beer because I think we may be able to get a special guest to come on here, Shirley. So speaking of complicated relationships and complicated songs, how about a complicated beer?
Yeah, I don't have a complicated relationship with this beer, unfortunately.
Well, I think it's really good. I'm going to give this one a 4. I like that it's hoppy, but not bitter. I like the complexity of the flavor. I like that it has an aftertaste, but not a super long aftertaste. It's kind of smooth for an IPA. It's not particularly dry. A lot of good things about this one, and I'm going to give it a 4.
I agree with you that it's not dry, it's not sweet. The aftertaste is very short. I think in that sense, it's balanced well, but it's just a hot bomb, and that's not my thing. I would drink it again. I cannot go so far as to say I enjoyed the experience of drinking it, so I'm going to give it a 3.0.
When you say a hot bomb, I know what you're talking about, but I will say that compared to a lot of those super bitter West Coast IPAs, this doesn't drink like that.
Right. It's not bitter. It's remarkably not bitter for the amount of hop flavor that's in
totally
it. It's just not my preferred flavor in a beer.
And I think our individual ratings are reflected by how much is left in our individual glasses at this point, because I'm almost done and you've got about half of it sitting there.
Yeah, I do. And I am going to finish it.
Well, tell you what, to finish that, before I give you your album, we are delighted to have a couple of special guests here with us. Why don't you go ahead and introduce them for us?
Yes, we are so lucky to be able to sit down with Jen Simmons, the owner of Glasstown Brewing, and her brother, Mike Rossi, one of the brewers, and also the graphic designer. So he designs all the labels for the beer cans. Thank you so much, Jen and Mike, for coming on. We're so excited to have this family connection on our family podcast.
Thank you so much for having us. We're very excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. It's wonderful. It's a great experience.
We love coming to, well, first of all, we love beer, which is why we do a podcast that incorporates some beer into the mix. And this is one of the first craft breweries I went to. I started, I think, doing Untapped in 2013 with Derek, my brother, who obviously stops in here all the time, as you know.
Yes, he's a regular.
He dragged me here. I was visiting. It was 2015. He brought me over to see the place, and it was just this space that we're sitting in today, and the big brewing facility next door wasn't here. The outdoor venue wasn't here. I think you guys had maybe 6 or 8 core beers on draft that were what you were making at the time. Classic craft beer. In the warehouse feel to it. You had to do the tour back then with the cars and all that stuff. And every time I get to town, I think we come over here and have a couple of beers because he's just such a regular. So we're so happy to be able to do this here.
Well, thank you for coming. And yeah, a lot of things have changed since 2015 or 13. We used to have a 3-barrel system. Now we have a 10-barrel system and we have a canning line. So we've definitely expanded a lot. And we usually have about 18 to 20 beers available now instead of our 5 to 6.
Yeah. We were admiring the great variety on your board up there. And we heard that you will be celebrating your 10-year anniversary in 2023. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We will be celebrating our 10th anniversary December 20th, 2023. And this year, last week, we celebrated our 9-year anniversary. So it's pretty exciting.
Congratulations. That is very exciting.
Mike, have you worked here since the beginning or did you come in later?
On and off. I started actually pouring beer as a beer tender and doing a minor graphic design, you know, making the graphic design bottles and literally hand pushing every single one of them on is what we had to do at the time. So yeah, from the beginning, but part-time. And then I think, 1 year open, then I switched full-time.
So you've been here for most of it?
Yeah, since the beginning, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he's been here since the beginning, but his roles changed a little bit and he's been brewing ever since, I guess, the second year.
Did you have a brewing background before you started or did you kind of learn everything here on the fly?
Everything was taught on the fly, and every year that we upgrade is on the fly too.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a learning curve every year. But I have a graphic arts degree, so I was going to go for computer animation, but that didn't pan out. So now I get to do the art labels, and
I'm
happy about that.
That's a lot of fun.
I want to put a picture of the Donkey Kong can on our website because I showed Zach. I think that's such a fun can. It's the design of the Donkey Kong game on the can.
Yeah, we have a couple,
so fun.
Couple video game themed items over there. We have Mosaic Man, Super C, which is like Super Contra, and we have Guns and Guts and Donkey Kong and Donkey Jr. So there's quite a bit of them, actually.
So I'm going to ask both of you the same question, because I think you'll have two different perspectives of it. You more as a beer tender, Mike, going back to your beer tender days. I'll ask you first. If somebody were to walk in and you were tending bar, They'd never been here before. And they said, what should I have? What do you make that's really good? What would you say?
Normally, I would try to just ask them a simple question of what do they normally drink that's not craft brew, and then try to cater to what we have. If they like IPAs, I would say the 609 IPA. If they like more maltier beers, I would say maybe the Fisherman's or something like that. It really depends on the person's taste. You want to like not give them a beer that they don't like in the beginning.
Right.
So you want to ask a couple questions to kind of gauge them out a little bit.
How about you, Jen? What would you say?
It's the same thing. I think that all of us that are behind the bar, we always ask the person if it's their first time, if they've been here, what they typically like to drink, so that way we can actually steer them in the right direction. And then say, hey, do you want to try something a little bit different? Like, do you like coffee? Okay, no, then I wouldn't recommend the Big Breakfast, or, you know, so there's definitely different things, but it helps to know what they like to drink. If someone doesn't know what an IPA is and they come in and it's their first time and they don't like hoppy beers, you don't want to give them four IPAs on a flight. So we definitely try and make sure that they get what they want. And maybe add one little thing in there that might be daring for them.
Always challenge your customers, right?
Yes.
Well, some people don't know what they like till they try it, right?
Exactly.
And if they don't go out of their comfort zone, they won't find a beer that they really enjoy.
Very true. And we do a lot of mixes here, actually, which is like a weird thing that has evolved over the years. But if someone comes in and has the beer for the first time, we like them to have it in its, you know, taste that first. And then if they like it, we can say, hey, this might be really good with, a lot of people do night fish. So it's night cap and our Fisherman's, because Nightcap's an 8.7 beer and Fisherman's is 4.5. So it's definitely something that you can mix together to kind of cut the alcohol for people that like those two beers. So
we noticed both my uncle Derek and Brooke, my cousin, were mixing beers, and I had never seen that done before. And
yeah,
you know, at first I had like, oh my God, the purity of the beer is ruined. But
yes,
then I tasted one. I tasted, what did Derek get? The Belgian with the splash of the passion fruit sour on top.
Yep.
And it was really good. And
yeah,
why aren't people doing that? It's like mixology, but for beer, why not?
We're not allowed to do much more because we can't act like a bar at all in New Jersey. So we're not allowed to do a lot of adjunct things that we can add to something. So it's kind of our way to be like, hey, it is a mixology thing. Mariah loves to do it. She's been with us for 8 years. And, you know, everyone just says, hey, Mo, just give me a mix. But yes, of course, there's going to be a lot of people that love craft beer and the purists that don't, how dare you do that? But we just have fun with it. It's beer. It's really not that serious. It's just a fun thing to do, and we just love to have fun with it. So
what were the roots of that, Jen? How did that start, or how did that evolve?
You know, I think the very first thing that happened is that Matt Layton is one of our regulars. He's been coming in since the beginning, his whole family. And we have our Super C and our Mosaic Man. And one day he goes, give me a Superman. And we're like, a Superman? What are you talking about? And he's like, can you mix together Super C and Mosaic Man? And we're like, okay. And since then, it's become a thing. So it's always been like, hey, let's try this. Like, you know, we have many different names, and a lot of people that come up with the mix name their mixes. So
it's like a secret menu, like at Starbucks or something.
It totally is. It is our secret menu. I've been wanting to put like a secret menu on our Instagram, like little thing.
Yeah.
But it's funny because there's so many mixes. We'll have to constantly update it.
It changes from the seasons. So like the winter beers will have different mixes and the summer beers will have other different mixes.
Yeah, it's definitely seasonal.
It's a lot.
Well, Derek was talking up the Belgian with the fruit, and he was sitting here and he was saying, you know what would be good? And he was talking to somebody about we should do blackberry. Like, he was suggesting flavors that would go with the beer at the bar one night, he was telling me.
Oh, yeah. He mentioned he wanted a blackberry beer with it. I remember that conversation, actually, with him. And we have a scratch series that we're going to be doing. We've only done one version of it so far, and we're shooting to do another one for our anniversary. We don't celebrate our anniversary in December. We celebrate it in the beginning of February, just because there's so much going on around the holidays. So we always push our actual anniversary celebration till after our anniversary. But we did a blackberry scratch. So he was saying that the blackberry scratch would be really good, I think, with the nightlight. And then he was like, you should do another version. You know, like, yeah.
So it's like a blackberry beer with pureed 300 pounds of blackberries with almost like a whipped cream flavoring to it. So it's a little different.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we use a local farm from Vineland for the blackberries. So
being in the garden part of the Garden State, how often do you get to locally source fruits for your projects?
It's difficult because mainly the fruits are only the summertime. So we've only done two beers so far that I would say that were locally sourced. We did our Blackberry Scratch, and then we did I'm Peachy. The peaches were from Sunny Slope, and then we did the blackberries from Pure Berry Company. So I would love to do more of that, but unfortunately we have a small window of time for the fruit. So we also have done other source things. We've done stuff with Rabbit Hill Farms, which is in Shiloh, for malts. We also have done local honey from Holly City Honey Company, and that's a regular of ours that comes in too. So we did a version of a bourbon brown with the honey, and hopefully we'll do that again. We just have so many different beers, it's hard to constantly, you know, we have to keep certain things in rotation and then have a little bit of fun. Like right now we have our peppermint stout, which is, you know, we've never done before, but it was perfect for the holidays.
The other thing that I've never seen done before is rimming the glass for a beer glass. I've never seen that anywhere. And when I saw on the menu that we could get our It's a Wonderful Ale with the cinnamon sugar rim, I think that is so fun, so creative, and it's another cocktail inspired element in a brewery, which I think is super interesting.
Yes, it's really fun. Mariah does love to have fun with her rims, and we always say she gives the best rims around. It's a little joke. But we have like multiple ones. It just depends on what the beer is, and white chocolate and peppermint for the stout is what we did. And then there's definitely different ones. Not all beers get rims, and we don't have the rims in the summertime typically, but they're fun.
So what's your plans for the future? Where do you see this going over the next 10 years?
Hopefully we'll be here in the next 10 years. There's so much breweries have opened in the last 10 years. It's crazy. I do see a slowdown happening with them opening. I would have to say we're going to be oversaturated soon. Hopefully, if we are lucky enough, we've been wanting to do a farm brewery forever, and we're looking at a piece of property that would be lovely to move over and have more space. We have a lot of families and regulars. We just do a lot of stuff out here that's so much fun that we'd love to do a lot more with families and the people that come out here and have, you know, just more experiences at the brewery. But hopefully, you know, we will get it. If not, then we'll stay here and continue to see how we can grow. We just moved into Pennsylvania last spring, so hopefully this year we'll really be able to push.
When you say moved in, you're distributing across the border.
Yeah. A lot of people are open to locations. That's not us. We just have our one location right now, and we're happy being in Millville. So.
Well, and it does feel like family in here. The fact that everyone is talking to everyone, it really does feel like everyone knows each other here, and it's such a cool atmosphere to be in here. You go into a brewery and everyone's at their little tables, right, drinking their beer. The entire brewery is talking to each other right now. It's really special.
Yes. A lot of people either know each other or don't, and they just start talking and they meet up again sometimes. Sometimes it's our only time, but, you know, it's great. I mean, we just want to make everyone feel welcome that walks in here and have, you know, this is like their place. And a lot of people do, I think, feel that. And it's not just us, it's the community. And the craft beer community is just amazing. And, you know, we're just very lucky to be part of it.
Well, we felt very fortunate that Derek was able to just kind of walk in and go, hey, can this happen? You know, my brother and my niece are coming. But the fact that you guys opened up early so we could get a head start on the crowd, and everything's been so nice. And that's part of that family feel, quite honestly. And Derek's trade-off was, I can bring 9 people that'll come drink if you open the bar early.
Right.
And sure enough, a bunch of people came in to watch us do this. They came in just because the bar opened early. It's great.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, Derek's mentioned it. There's so much going on during the holidays, so it was like so hard to like commit, but I'm really glad that we were able to make it happen.
This was great to be able to have you guys sit down with us. Because, you know, sometimes people go, please record, but we don't have time. We know how busy everybody is. We're like, we're fine. We just need a socket. We're good with a socket. But this has been super nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
I think we have one final question. Is that right?
We do have a question. Uh-oh. You asked it.
Out of left
this
field.
Was,
all right.
This was your album. You asked.
So we are a beer and music podcast.
Yes.
So we always have to throw a curveball and ask, have you heard of the artist Eric Hutchinson?
Yes, I have, actually.
Do you remember when and how you first heard of him? Have you heard any of his music?
Oh, my gosh. I think I might have something on my iTunes if I go back. Probably 12 years ago, maybe longer.
That sounds about right.
That'd be about right.
Yeah, it's about when I heard of him.
Is he actually like from Philadelphia area?
So he's from the Washington, D.C. area, but he went to school in Boston. So both metro areas kind of claim him as their own.
Well, let me see if I actually have it on my phone.
That's so funny.
That would be really. He's not very popular from what I know, right? He's not like a big, like.
No, well.
Not really.
No, he's singer-songwriter, yeah. So kind of a niche genre, but his breakout album he released independently and it was a huge smash hit, and he's now signed to a label, and to my knowledge, he hasn't had too much huge success since then. So,
Mike, have you ever heard of him? Okay. And Michael loves music, but I'm more of a singer-songwriter person, so that's probably why I heard of him.
The song you would know maybe is Rock and Roll or Okay, It's All Right With Me. Those are the two.
Okay, All Right Is With Me. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
I was like, I know the name.
That is on the album we discussed today.
Looks like we're going to get iTunes confirmation here.
Let's go.
There it is. Look, it's on the phone.
There you go. There you go. Look at that.
Let's see. What do I have?
Oh, she's got one from a different album.
Yes, and I love that song, too.
See?
How about that?
But I did know the other song, too.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That is funny.
I will say that everyone that works here has a different music genre that they bring to the table. So everyone back there has their own little niche bands, and people that work at the bar has their own band. So all together, I feel like we encompass every music genre there is here.
The playlist that was playing when we were setting up was very eclectic. I noticed that for sure.
There's a lot of music that they listen to that I am like, who is this? And then like, because obviously I'm in my 40s and some of them are in their 20s and 30s. So I've definitely learned some new music that I'm like, okay, cool.
Well, that's why we started this, because between us, there's this big generational gap. And so the whole purpose of this was so we could trade albums back and forth and learn different kinds of music.
Like share music.
Sharing music.
And beer.
And doing it over a good beer, right?
Hey, conversations are good over a good beer and some music.
Absolutely. That is what we found.
The truth comes out.
It absolutely does.
It did today. Wait till you hear the episode. Some hard truths were unveiled.
That's awesome.
Well, Jen and Mike, thank you so much again for sitting down with us. This has been so lovely. Just the whole experience from recording to interviewing you. It's been great. And your beer is great. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. And it was good to talk to you. Maybe next time you guys are in town, we'll do it again.
We're always here.
And I just want to thank you both for being here, too. It's really important, especially in the holidays, for somebody to come in here and then see our atmosphere and want and take the effort to do a podcast here. I mean, it's a lot stressful on you guys too, but hopefully the atmosphere makes it all better at the end of the day. You're like, wow, this was great, you know, for all of us.
We're trying to draw attention to places that make great beer. And so to be able to do it in a place that's this close to where I grew up is so special to me. And I can't thank you guys enough for having us.
Thank you for coming. Yes,
thank you so much.
Wow. Thanks so much again to Jen Simmons and Mike Rossi. What a fabulous interview. And like we said, it really does feel like family in here. And they've been so kind to us today. And I have so much love for them. So thanks again to both of them for jumping on with us.
And speaking of family, they're back there staring at us. So we should wrap this up so we can have another cold beer with the gang who's back there.
But before we do that, I think you need to give me an album.
It is my turn to give you an album. So I'm going back to the Jack Cornell files.
The JCF, yes.
For an album that Jack come running at me one day at the hospital. For anybody who doesn't know Jack Cornell is, go look up the archives. You'll see plenty of Jack Cornell material.
Oh, yeah.
He's a member now of the Three Timers Club. But anyway, Jack comes running up to me one day. He goes, I just got this new album, this new band. You're going to love this thing. The Jayhawks. And this was their debut album, Hollywood Town Hall. Pretty sure it was 1991, might be 1992. I'll give you the date specifically next time. Kind of a folk rock album, so a little bit different for me. And I think you're really going to like it.
I've never heard of the Jayhawks. So
no?
No.
I have several of their albums, starting with this one. Always enjoy it.
So this was their debut album?
But this was their debut album. So they were brand new, and Jack discovered them. And as a result of that, I discovered them too. So
awesome.
Another thanks, Jack Cornell, for the Jayhawks.
Thanks, Jack.
And we'll talk about that next time. In, I believe, episode 50.
Oh, wow. That's very exciting.
We've made it 50 episodes.
Oh, wow. I just got chills. That's really cool.
I hope the Jayhawks do as well for episode 50.
I hope so. I'm excited to listen.
It's a big milestone.
If you need more Pops on Hops content in the meantime, you can find us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, at Pops on Hops Pod, or you can email us at popsonhopspod@gmail.com. Wherever you're listening to this, there should be a link in the show notes to leave us a voice message if that's something that interests you, or you can visit our cool website. popsonhopspod.com. That's where we have bonus photos, videos, and other materials related to each of our bi-weekly episodes. That is also where you can submit an entry to our virtual jukebox for a chance for your favorite album, and even your voice, to appear on the pod. And on behalf of Hops
and Pops,
we'll see you next time. Okay, it's all right with me. Some beers are just meant to be, not too sweet nor too hoppy, and that is just the beer that I like.
Bye.
To finish that, how about we invite in a special guest?
Did you rate this one?
I gave it a 4.
I didn't hear that.
Well, it's on tape.
Are you sure?
I guarantee you it is.
Okay. Are you sure?
I'm positive. If not, it is now.
Okay.
I think you'll be surprised when you hear the final product.
Okay. I always am.